the good, the bad, the ugly.
Welcome to Sustain Nutrition's podcast, Chewing the Fat, where Joe and James will be discussing all things good, bad and ugly regarding training and nutrition. So pull up your pants, put your best foot forward and get ready for some serious oral pleasure. Without further ado, here are your hosts, Joe and James.
Sustain.
Nutrition.
Chewing.
The.
Fat.
Podcast.
Where's your microphone? Episode.
You said it was all right last week. 128?
128? Why are we going back to the future? 136.
Oh, I must have missed a couple then.
Yeah, last week was 135.
I could have worked out, if this week was 136, I could have worked out what last week was.
You are the maths guy. Joe, what are we talking about?
The best of a bad situation, which I feel like is a bit of an analogy for Sustain Podcast. Like, if you've got an hour to kill, then this could be the best of a bad situation.
We very rarely do an hour. Okay, so real world, real life, real talk, real men. I don't know where it's going. Sometimes this is, I suppose, on a slight tangent. Let's go straight in with the first one. Meal plans don't work because they don't account for real-world situations. Real-world situations when you forget to take your lunch to work, when you are caught short, when you're home late, when you freezer breaks and you don't have any food prepped.
When you're at a buffet and there's just someone else has made a decision for you, which is always my chronic undoing.
Yeah. So we're just going to talk about how you can make the best of a few random situations. We just have a little chat beforehand about this idea. This might resonate with some people of, I don't have control of my food choices. So then you just eat everything. You go hell for leather. And the example I was using with Joe, or speaking to Joe about, was saying, like, if I go to Big Mama W's house, honestly, which I'm going this Sunday, actually, fingers crossed she makes one of her legendary lasagnas. I know Mum's going to have the cured meats out. She's going to have nuts out. She's going to have crisps out. She's going to have olives. She's going to have one of those little platters that she got from Spain that's got a little pot for the olives and a little pot for the toothpicks and all that. She's going to do lasagna. She's going to do garlic bread with lasagna, obviously, because you need carbs with carbs. She's going to do a salad. She's going to do some kind of dessert. And then there's going to be coffee and chocolates afterwards. Now, if I go in with that mentality, like, I've got no control of my food and I have all of that, then my calories are going to be in a world of hurt. So by making the best of a bad situation, I could go in there with certain caveats as there. I'm going to have one myself, just one portion of lasagna, because I always get a seconds. I might just say, right, and then I'm just going to eat a load of salad, and then I'm going to have no dessert. I'm going to have none of the nibbles at the start. So I'm not going to have any garlic bread. I'm not going to have any chocolates. That'd be best case scenario. Or I could, again, depending on what's right for me, I could go, I'm going to allow myself just two pieces of garlic bread. I'm going to allow myself to have the dessert, but I'm not going to have any of the starters. Or any kind of combination. It's just having some control of it. So even this could be the shortest podcast ever. Even if you don't have control over the food choices, you have control over the amounts of food that you do eat or what you eat of what's available. And again, on a slight caveat. Then if my mum turned around and said, I've made you dessert. If I say, you know what, mum, I'm absolutely stuffed. She's not going to go like, eat it. Eat it. Make me eat it. And again, this might ring true for a few people, and that's the kind of stories that people tell themselves, that that's the situation they imagine. Like, if I didn't eat it, I'd have really offended them. Like, if you just eat a massive meal, no one's going to force feed you like foie gras. I stumbled through that, didn't I? You know, like a goose with a bloody funnel down its throat trying to get force feed it to get a fatty liver. But anyway, over to you, Joe.
Yeah, there's a thing that people say, you know, I have no control. And the big problem here isn't the food that your mum provides or the location, other people's decisions. The problem's you. The problem's the things that you've said. Yeah, it's all your fault. But it's true, is that if you go in with that attitude of, I've got no control here, then you're already taking the handbrake off. Whereas if you go in with, I'm going to control this to the best of my ability and manage what I can, then you're already in that right kind of mind frame. I think it's really important to look at the words that you use. I've called a couple of people up on it today about the words resist. I managed to resist. And I know it might be a minor detail, but it's obviously something that I've got to be in my bonnet about. So I'll treat myself to a couple of minutes as well. Is that when you say the word resist, it suggests to me that you're going against what you really want, that you are doing the thing that's not right for you. And yes, it might be hard work, but it's still a choice. Like, you're choosing to do this. And people will often say, like, I resisted this, as if they've done it for me, as if you not eating the charcuterie and the olives and the, you know, the dessert and the chocolates afterwards is for anyone else other than yourself. And it's not, it's for you. That's your choice. No one can make you do it. And in the same breath, no one can stop you doing it if you do really want to. And it's so, I think it's super important to take that ownership and that autonomy over this situation and say, I am choosing not to eat this because longer term it's going to benefit me. And that is so much more of an empowering statement. And if we look at the people that we typically work with, and people typically in the world, not just within Sustain, they're often people who don't have very much compassion for themselves. They don't take as much ownership as they could do. Often things are other people's fault. And if you change both of those, if you give yourself more compassion and you take more ownership, you'll be more successful and you'll be happier with it. And so it's a bit of a no-brainer. It's hard because you've then got to, when things don't go right, you've got to look at that. You've got to reflect upon it. Now, we've talked about this with Sustain. And that if Sustain doesn't get to the level that we want, the only place, you know, the buck stops with us. You know, and your success will stop with you and my success will stop with me, because I don't work on weekends. I don't work late. I'm not as productive as I could be. You know, we could stretch ourselves and invest in different coaches and mentors, but we don't, for whatever reason. And it's then, that is a much more bitter pill to swallow, rather than me going, well, do you know what? It's James's fault that Sustain isn't where it wanted it to be. And actually, it's that mentor that we worked with a while ago. He didn't really help us. Yeah, that's it. If those two things had changed, then everything would be great. And then I get to sit there and feel smug about it. But then nothing changes, because then I'm relying on James or a mentor to manage that. And it's the same with the food here. If you blame someone else and you say, I have no control, then that's responsible for you not getting your results, which takes away your autonomy and means you put in less effort. Whereas if you look at these things and say, right, I can't control X, but I can control Y, then you're going to be more successful. It's just whether you're willing to do it. And it's not easy to do. And often people won't even think about this. And that's why we're doing podcasts like this. So people start to challenge the way that they talk, the way that they think, because only by changing those things can you then change the end result.
I'm a big fan of pulling people up on the words that they use. Yeah, and I think just two things for me on that one is that idea of resist is such a negative word. You know, and I think when I think resist, I think like resistance training, like it's a massive struggle. You're struggling to lift something. I really want it, but I've got to try and resist having it. Like you said, it's super negative. And as soon as you say, I chose not to have it, it feels different saying it. It's a completely different thing. It's so much more empowering. Like, oh, I'm choosing, I could have this. No one's going to come and kick this out of my mouth. You know, no one's going to jump through the window and say, no, James, no. It's like, I'm going to choose not to have this thing. So much more positive. Because like I said, it's showing that level of control. And then on the other point, yeah, it's like, what can you control? And that's something that where people, again, where your focus goes, your energy flows. A big one, you know, for a lot of our clients is they will focus on all the things that they can't do. Say someone gets injured. I can't do this and I can't do that. I can't do this and I can't do that. This, and I can't do this. Just shaking his fist at me. well, what can you do? You know, it's that thing. I was speaking to a client the other day and we were talking about mindset. I said, you've got to ask better questions. That's how to do. What can I do? Instead of me going like, oh, my God, well, I can't. Do my spin class and I can't do my 10,000 steps and I can't do squats. Okay, what can you do? Right, well, I can do this and this. How much more positive is that, focusing on what you can do? And like you said, you know, you go to a beige buffet. Okay, what can you do? What can you control? Right, well, I can limit the amount of pastry stuff that I have. I can choose not to have dessert. I can maybe have some fruit. You know, your classic business lunch, isn't it? You go to a conference or something like that, and it's all sandwiches and fruit and maybe some yogurts and cakes or whatever. Okay, what can you have? Well, I could just have a sensible amount of sandwiches. I could fill up on fruit. I could maybe go for a little walk, find a shop, buy a, a protein shake or something, whatever. You know what I mean? It's, yeah, just making the best of what you've got. And again, I don't know if people will see this and go like, making the best of a bad situation, they're going to give me a perfect formula. They're not. What they're not. We're not even. It's the mentality of looking at that, again, like asking better questions. What can I do? What can I control in this situation? Just because I'm going to, I have to eat at McDonald's. Okay, well, what can I order that I'm going to be happy with? It doesn't have to be a Big Mac with large fries and a large drink or a large milkshake. Let me have a look at the menu. What can I get? A grilled chicken, a crispy chicken wrap. I don't care. That's going to be a better option. Crispy chicken wrap and a large, you know, Coke Zero.
Milkshake.
Okay. Yeah, to dip it into. Diet Coke, you know. Whatever you want. Again, you, as soon as you shift that perception of what can I do, it's totally different feeling. And again, you've got that control. Like you said, I'll stop talking in a minute. It's that victim mentality, isn't it? You know, if you're a victim, things happen to you. You have to get out of that frame of mind. You have to fight back and be like, nah, I'm taking control of this situation. What can I control? And there you go. That's it. End of podcast. Cut.
And it's so hard for people because they are just used to not doing that. They are used to focusing on the negatives, whether that's because of the way they were raised. Maybe that's how their parents were. Maybe that's to do with, you know me, love a bit of past history and digging into the trauma that people go through. But these things have an impact on people. And it's only when you open your eyes to what are the words that you're saying, what are the thoughts that you have, what are your patterns of action, what are your habits? You know, we joke and say to people, well, you know, I know you're semi-joking there saying, you know, go to McDonald's and have a chicken wrap rather than a Big Mac and fries and a Coke. And people go, that's really obvious. It's not obvious. Yeah, it's not, because that stuff is seriously ingrained into some people. And the things that you look at someone else and say, oh, that's really obvious. There's some really stupid, obvious, not I'm using stupid in quotation marks. There's some things that are blatantly obvious to other people that you're doing, you know, and it's really easy for me to go to the gym at 6 o'clock in the morning and push out a weight session because that's what I've done since the age of 14. It's coming up to 20 years now that I've done that for. I've been consistently in the gym. That is so, so easy for me. Whereas when you say to me, go to a buffet and don't overeat. Oh man, I struggle like mad. Because again, that's what I've always done. So these things will, people have different levels. There are other people who have been brought up with better mindful eating practices or more awareness around their food, but they've never been to a gym. They're going to have the complete opposite struggles to me. They're going to go to a buffet and it's going to be so, so easy. But ask them to go to the gym in the morning and it feels like moving a mountain. And so you have to be aware that the handbrake there then is the stuff that you think isn't possible. So it's all well and good me going, well, do you know what? If I started doing wide grip bicep curls instead of close grip, I might get an extra 2% gain. Where I get the biggest gain is on the buffet piece, is on the bits that I struggle with the most. And I think very often when it comes to making the best of a bad situation, people will focus on the smaller pieces and they won't look at the big pieces. So for example, you know, you talk about that your Sunday meal example, people will go and say, well, you know, I did have the charcuterie and the olives and the lasagna and the garlic bread and the salad and the dessert, but I didn't have any of the chocolates at the end. Okay, I'm glad you didn't have any of the chocolates, that's great, but there's five more progression points here. There's more you can do. And getting into that mindset that it hasn't made you a failure. It's just being able to look at these things non-judgmentally. And to tie it back to the bit at the start, if you're someone who is quite disposed to being negative or critical, this is going to be really hard for you because you'll keep looking at things that way.
That bloody dog.
And you have to catch yourself. You have to ask, you know, is this the right way of me looking at these things? Is this the truth or is this just my truth? And that's something that we see people struggling with a lot. And our job as coaches is to unpick that and to challenge people on it.
Yeah, and like you said about the past, not so much the past traumas, but I think a lot of it as well comes from that idea of all or nothing, 100%, have to be perfect, you know, nonsense that's been fed, ironically, to you from dieting culture. You know, this is good, this is bad, this is a pass, this is a fail. Have you lost work this week? Oh, you need to try harder. That idea that when you go to that buffet, you go to that conference, and those food choices don't fall in with this perfect approach. It's like, well, in for a penny, in for a pound, as opposed to looking at it and going, right, okay, this is not ideal, but what can I do to limit the amount of, I don't want to say damage because that sounds dramatic, but, you know, negative effect this could have on my approach, because no one got fat from eating a couple of sandwiches. No one got fat from eating a Rice Krispie cake that your nephew made for you. You know, these aren't pass or fail situations. They're just, okay, they're not ideal. Cool. Let's just roll with that. What's best case scenario? What can we do to make this a little bit better?
It's another, to go back to using the right words as well, it's the idea of failure. And yeah, that, and I'm keen to try to keep on tasks. I know we like a good divergence, but the idea of making the best of a bad situation is that what matters is the end result. And I always use the example, like if Lewis Hamilton's racing around a track and he takes a corner wide, is that a failure? Well, no, it depends if he wins the race or if he wins the championship that year. What matters is the end result. And so people say, you know, I had a crunchy today. It felt like a big failure. You know, I'm really frustrated. Like, but what happened this week? Oh, I lost a pound. Brilliant then. You know, you're losing the wood for the trees. And people can be, and it's just always coming back to that. Is this the right way to think? And challenging that and questioning yourself and your thoughts, because it can make people, you can have the same end result. You know, that person who eats the crunchy and criticizes themselves and the person that eats it and accepts it and lets it go. Same end result. Both people lose a pound. One person is infinitely happier than the other one. And that same person is also a lot more positive and a lot more likely to keep going. And so often, you know, you'll hear people say, I need to be like this because otherwise stuff doesn't get done. If I'm not critical, then I won't be successful. Ah, that's not true. That is correlation. That's not causation. You do not get more successful the more you beat yourself up. You wouldn't recommend a friend do it. You wouldn't recommend your partner do it. You wouldn't recommend your kids do it. So you have to question these thoughts when they're there, like, oh no, I need to do this. I need to be that critical to get where I want to be. Because you don't. I don't think it helps. I think it makes people less happy. And ultimately, we're not here just to help people lose weight. We want them to be happier too. And so there's lots of different things that all tie into this simple result of I want to lose fat. It was interesting, wasn't it? We put in the group the other day saying, what result, you know, is fat loss your number one goal? It was, you know, about 90% of people said yes. But we're not just a fat loss company. It's not just, we're not here just to help you lose weight. We'd have a very different approach if we did. We wouldn't give you so much freedom, that's for sure. You know, it would just be, here's your meal plan, here's the eat list, here's the avoid list. But we don't want to do that. We don't think it, you know, doesn't tie into that vision of helping people to be happier. And that best of a bad situation is, there are times when your weight should go up. I've had a lady recently, it was her birthday last week. She had a few meals out, a few drinks, you know, bits of stuff most days. She gained 500 grams. But she's lost 9 pounds, you know, over the last 5 or 6 weeks. And I can guarantee you, looking at how she's eaten the first 4 days of this week, that weight's going to come off, probably with interest. So you zoom out and you go, right, 6 weeks in, she's lost whatever it's going to be, 8 pounds. Well, she lost 8 pounds after 4 weeks, so it feels like a failure. Well, no, it's not, because it's 6 pounds down over 8 weeks. You can look at this stuff however you want, but why not choose that happiness story to steal Ranjan Chatterjee's piece and make yourself feel better? You know, it's not serving you like you might think it is.
Yeah, that overcritical approach, like, it's no happy ending to an unhappy journey. And
great.
It can be a bit of a double, you're welcome, a bit of a double-edged sword card, because then you can get sometimes people pulling, you know, positives out of things that aren't necessarily that positive. The example where you said where someone had everything but they didn't have a chocolate, like, but I didn't have any chocolate, like, that is a positive, but there's still a lot, you know, that we can, you know, look at here as well. But yeah, again, it's changing. It's stuff that we say all the time, isn't it? It's changing that frame that you look at things. It's changing the language that you use. It's changing your idea of what's a pass, what's a fail, what's possible in that situation. Yeah, it's just going to be such a happier journey. And like you said, with our approach, if we were just looking for maximum fat loss, 100%, let's get you on a massive deficit. Let's get your activity really high. Let's get a ton of weight off you really, really quickly. Get you out the door. See you later. that's not sustained nutrition. You know, that's not learning. That's not a happy journey as such. And that's not you. Because then you get to that buffet, you'd be like, how am I going to track this? Yeah. How am I going to track this? And also, like, I've been restricting all these foods. I'm going to go mental. So it's just, yeah, it's not for us. That's what you're after. Then go listen to someone else. But
if you want to sign up to our new fat loss plan, it's part of our sister company, Unsustainable Nutrition.
Rapid yo-yo diet.
It'd be good, because then people can then do that and then go to Sustain Nutrition.
We could pitch in this. I like your thinking, Joe. I think that's about all I've got to say about that.
Well, good. Aspect, do you want to summarize?
Yeah, well, just ask better questions. Instead of looking at all the things that you can do, look at the things that you can do. What's possible? What can you choose that you're going to be happy with? What's the best option? And again, I suppose question, is that story that you're telling yourself, if you can pause and say, is what I'm thinking really true? That's been a massive benefit for me, is that like the stories that we tell ourselves that we then conform to with our behavior is that really true, or am I just bullshitting myself? And 9 times out of 10, I'm bullshitting myself.
I'll finish with a little story. Last night, so we were sat around and said to Chris, you know, I really fancy eating some rubbish food. I said, all right, then let's go to Asda and get a protein yogurt. And I was like, I didn't say I wanted a protein yogurt. I said I wanted rubbish food. Obviously, I said this in my head, and she won't listen to this, so that works nicely. So we wandered over to the Asda, and I picked up a vanilla protein yogurt, and I was like, right, let's go look at the chocolate. And as I'm walking between the aisles, I'm like, do you really want this? And I was like, oh, I know the answer. And I could feel it. And I was like, I don't really want this. And so we kind of haggled it down. And I said to Chrissy, I was like, I don't really want to eat rubbish food, just because I'm in a bad mood. She said, how about we get like a Snickers peanut butter? So it's like two little chocolate bits. And then we'd share that and it'd be fewer calories. Like, okay, let's do that. And so we walked down to the chocolate thing. And then it looks like there's been like a pack of wolves has hit this chocolate aisle. To be honest, it's absolutely barren. And there's none of the stuff that I wanted.
I apologize.
and she said, should we get something else then? And because I'd put that pause in there, because we'd walked to Asda, because I'd got something that was sweet-ish to the tune of 100 calories, it was then enough for me just to go, no, I'm all right. Let's have something tomorrow instead. But if there had been 10 Snickers peanut butters in my house, I'd have probably, you know, I'd have eaten them. And because that environment was set up to make it harder, it made it easier for me to make those decisions. And so often, if you're trying to make the best of a bad situation, giving yourself time to think, trying to prep that environment as best you can make a massive difference. Don't rely on your own willpower. You know, mine nearly broke in half last night, and it was only because the environment was set up to allow that. And so people often say, I want more willpower. Because actually, if they just change their environment a little bit, it would make a massive difference.
So what do you mean by changing your environment? I know, but for the listeners, it's about putting friction, is it, between you and those choices that you don't want to make?
Absolutely. So removing temptation from your house, you know, and doing all the small pieces that, because we didn't have a high-calorie plan for this week, which meant that we could deviate from it more easily. We hadn't scheduled the stuff in, but in the same breath, there wasn't. So that would have really helped. That's something we didn't do. But what did help is that we didn't have anything at home. So therefore, I've got to then walk to the shop to get some. And actually, by picking a shop that was a little bit further away, I don't even know if I did that consciously or not. Yeah, because we had a fallback. We had a plan B, which was a protein yogurt. Right, I'll go buy one of those. Because if I'd gone to Asda without that, I wouldn't have bought that. So it's my environment can be physically with regards to what food's in my house, but it can also be mentally, right? I'm going to have a treat on Wednesday and Friday. And if I have to break free from that for whatever reason, then there's a protein yogurt in reserve. It's a bit like this. I was speaking to someone who was saying, I didn't fancy a full meal. And so I had some crisps and some chocolate. Like, okay, so there's a few things here, because you can then change what your idea of a full meal is, or we can have some backup takeaway options. You know, what things can you order in that you'd enjoy that would still be nutritious? Can you have some sushi? Can you have, you know, a mixed grill with a side salad? You know, there's lots and lots of different options. And again, it's not physical. There's not food there in front of you, but you've made that decision ahead of time. You've changed that mental environment by the way that you think, by giving yourself options. And it just, it stems back to the stuff we said before. If you're not recording what you're doing and you're not reflecting on it and you're not trying to think of ways to do better, if you're busy patting yourself on the back or you're saying there's no other option, then you'll never ever find these things, because you're stuck in that one track mindset of I've got no control. As soon as you change that, you open up to a world of possibilities.
So I've got a couple of questions. FYI, the chocolate mousse, the high protein chocolate mousse from Aldi, 8.7 out of 10.
Hi.
Go on.
I was going to say, we picked up a vanilla yogurt yesterday, and I was like, and now I'm going to get a cake to pour this on.
Hashtag high protein. Yes, so any regrets on you not eating a ton of chocolate this morning?
Last night, mate, by the time I'd left Asda, I was like, that was the right decision.
Yeah. And again, but it's
even,
just that pause.
Even less so today, like hand on heart, you know, because all the cravings have gone. It's a miracle power of sleep, isn't it? I've never, ever once woken up and gone, I wish I'd had more last night.
Yeah.
Never. There's a lot of times I've had too much and woken up and gone, shouldn't have done that.
Yep. And that is sometimes is as simple as getting through this next hour or getting through this day. I'm just going, right, let me see if I still have those cravings tomorrow.
Is it future pacing as well? What's that?
Well, that's more kind of like looking at the vision of where you want to be to. You want to be. Smash that English.
But it's trying to live in the future, isn't it? How will I feel tomorrow? What do I really need right now? Well, what's going on? I'm just a bit frustrated, you know. And the more you can verbalize this stuff and bring it to the front of your mind, the better.
Yeah, and just on a slight side note there, because a little bit easier for you. Not saying it's easier for you, but obviously it's you and Chrissy in the house and Fenton, as we've heard him chirping in. So it's easier for you to go like, right, let's not have any chocolate or biscuits or snacks or whatever in the house. Whereas obviously a lot of our listeners will be parents. So that's not always an option. But when we say about putting friction, like put it out of sight, somewhat out of mind, put it in a biscuit tin on the top cupboard, whatever. If you've got biscuits and chocolate and crisps on the side in your eye line, then you're in struggle city.
If you How do you manage it with Magnus? Do you have high calorie stuff for him in?
No, not really. He has like the kids' crisps. He'll have chocolate buttons. He doesn't really have a lot. He sometimes steals my nibble of my dark chocolate.
You find that if he just has a couple of cigarettes, it takes the edge off.
Yeah, he just loads up his syringe and he's not bad. Yeah, I mean, he loves chocolate buttons. He gets them like when it's someone's birthday at nursery and stuff like that. But he's not too nutty. He loves popcorn. But no, we don't have a ton in. But I'm pretty good at moderating. I'll have kind of two squares. I have about 24 grams of chocolate a day. That's me done.
Charlie in the Chocolate Factory.
Augustus Gloop. You're describing yourself.
I was going to say something really mean. I'll text it to you afterwards.
So, yeah, I think that's it. Again, if you go back to atomic habits, isn't it? It's like create as much friction as possible between the habits that you're trying to stop and make the ones that you want to reinforce as friction-free as possible. You've got to lube those suckers up by being as proactive as possible. Good face on that one.
So when Magnus, because it's like you are spot on with what you said, it is easier for me. Also, the fact that I've been working in the fitness industry since the age of 21 also makes things quite easier. But like you said there, it's different for me, and that will be a lot of people saying, oh, I've not got kids, it's different for me. But you do have kids, a child. So
God, no more.
When he wants high-calorie food, or when you decide to have some, because it's not like he never eats any, do you go out and buy portion-specific amounts so that when it's gone, it's gone? Or can you have it in the house and he doesn't have it?
Yeah, he never really asks for it. If he sees me eating some chocolate, then he might ask for some, or just have like a bite or two off mine. That's it. He doesn't kind of demand. Yeah, no, he doesn't really demand stuff, but he's not like, oh, he's not allowed chocolate or anything like that. He can have chocolate. He just don't have it all the time.
Welcome to episode podcast 3 of today's episode. What about using it to placate him? You know, or do you ever use it as a reward?
No.
Because that's going to make a massive difference, isn't it? That must make a huge difference by the fact that it's not that thing of like, you banged your knee, here's some chocolate. If you're good, you can have some chocolate. You know, it's that. And it's very difficult for me to say. Have you made a conscious effort to not do that stuff?
Yeah, I've worked with too many people that have a bad relationship with sweet foods as a reward. They're like, oh, you've fallen over and hurt yourself, here's some chocolate. Are you feeling sad? Eat some chocolate. No.
Yeah.
Not. I think that's, unfortunately, my belief would be that that's setting him up for trouble. So he just has it. So like I say, I normally have two squares of dark chocolate or milk chocolate, depends, after my dinner. Cup of tea, chocolate, that's my little habit on an evening. Yeah, and like I said, he'll have chocolate buttons every so often. If we've got a cinema or something, then we'll have popcorn and maybe a bit of chocolate, and he has his little fruit set up. But it's not like an everyday occurrence for him.
I think that's so key, isn't it? That's the bit that people can control right now, and you will get kickback for it. But then one of the things that we hear so often, isn't it? People say, I want my children to have a better relationship with food than I did. And so there's going to be pain in that. If you've already started down that journey, which is no criticizing people for, I'm sure, imagine you were raised similarly. I know that I was, with regards to food as a reward and as a benefit and as a placator. And that's, you know, what I saw from my parents' behaviors too. But that's most people. And so it's now about changing those things so that you can have that easy, they can have that easier relationship with food that you didn't have, like you said, with Magnus, isn't it? So yeah, it's not easy. I'm not suggesting that everyone has to do it.
But it's I've probably got more awareness around it because of the career that I've got. So I'm more aware of, like, okay, let's not go, right, you've done really well, here's some chocolate. I mean, he gets rewards for eating his dinner. He gets a sticker, and then if he gets 7 stickers, then he gets a toy. And then he gets little rewards for sleeping through the night, because I would give him a tenner a day if he slept through the night every night. But, you know, that's probably not setting up with the best relationship with toys. But not chocolate. Good.
Perfect.
To summarise, that's our parenting 101.
Yes, I'm done.
Thank you, as always, for listening. You want to say goodbye, Joel?
See you later.
Are you supposed to say goodbye, Joel? That's the old gag. Oh, right.